Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Beautiful, yes. I love the naturalness of the singing. Beautiful, thank you for that. And that's what we're talking about today, part two, Uppity Women of the Bible. Gospel version today. Uppity women, what does that suggest? It means people on, and you know, we know that we have masculine and feminine energies within us. So when we're talking about women, we're not just talking about the female gender. We're talking about that aspect of intuitive awareness, nurturing, strength, and courage that is within us all, right? But uppity suggests that someone is not going to take it lying down, being conventional, being less than, but it's the attitude of mind that dares to break through, to show our true colors, to stand up for what we truly believe in. And we covered quite a few women in the Old Testament. Now I've got eight women from the Gospels today that I want to talk about. First one, of course, we have to put her first, Mary, the mother of Jesus, because first and foremost, she is a radically self-accepting woman, because she accepted the fact that she was worthy to receive the Christ, right? And that's huge, isn't it? For us as well, you know, the idea that I have the Christ within me and I'm birthing it, I'm allowing it to come forth into actuality. This is the truth of my being. To really know that is one thing, but then to be willing to bring it forth into my life experience is massive. It's huge. And it's a day-by-day journey, it seems to me, yeah? It's not something, well, I'm the Christ now. Not quite that simple, is it? It has to be reaffirmed and lived from depth every single day, right? And Mary, imagine what it was like to receive that message from the angel Gabriel, that you are to birth the Christ. And she stayed with it all through Jesus' early life. She was with him. She was there all through his ministry. She was there at the end, yeah? And she was there to gather up the dead body, and Joseph of Arimathea helped and took it to the tomb. So she was constant. That's the word that comes to me when I think of the Mary quality, Mary Mother of God quality, right? A constant presence through the highs and through the lows. And that's an old-fashioned quality, constant, because we're in the world of sound bites, we're in the world of ADHD, we're in the world of chopping and changing, we're in the world of multitasking. And it's so nice to have something simple like this, somebody that's there. And, you know, he was the one in the spotlight, right? She wasn't always in the spotlight, and yet that was okay because she knew she had this amazing task. In other words, our ego is put down so that our spirit can be lifted up. That's what I'm hearing, too, is that constancy in remembering the truth of my being. So Mary is, you know, and of course, if you're a Catholic, she's almost like another god, right? Lifted up to that exalted level. But I think we're lifting up that constancy, that willingness to not just be a fair-weather friend. Easy to be a fair-weather friend, isn't it? When everything's going great. But when the tough times come, that's when you know who your real friends are, your real supporters. And Mary represents that ability to stick with it. Stick with it, consciousness. Now, the other Mary, a little different, but she exhibits the same kind of tenacity. I'm talking about Mary Magdalene, right? Now, Mary Magdalene isn't really mentioned very much in the Bible, but her legend is huge, you know? Everybody's heard of Mary Magdalene, and not just because she saw Jesus Christ Superstar, though we're going to sing the song from her song from that in a little bit. But Mary Magdalene is an interesting woman because whereas Mary was pure, kind of Mary Magdalene was more juicy because she was impure. And you know, God always gives the best roles to the bad people, right? Is that what they said? So she started off, they say she might have been a prostitute, though it doesn't say that in the Bible. She was filled with seven demons and Jesus was able to remove the demons. In other words, she was a confused person just like you and me, right? That's what I'm hearing. Because we all have these demons going around. We may not call them demons anymore, but they are confused states of being. Some anger, some desire, some fear, some panic. You name it, right? Those are the demons. But what had she decided? She had seen something higher. And a lot of the uppity women of the Bible became remarkable because they saw something higher than what God seemed to have doled out to them. They knew they were more than. And Mary Magdalene, she knew she was more than just a demon-possessed person. And when she did find Jesus, when she did discover the Christ, she devoted herself tirelessly to that journey of unfoldment, right? Who was the first person to see the risen Christ? It's not rocket science, because we're just talking about her. It was Mary Magdalene. She was the first person to see the risen Christ. I think there's huge metaphysics in that, right? It means that devotion of the confused state coming up into greater clarity and awareness is what truly sees the Christ. So it's good news for us, right? It's not like you have to be so pure to receive the Christ and understand it. No, you could be a prostitute, you could be a fool, you could be possessed with confusion, all kinds of stuff. God doesn't care. God is willing to be present anywhere in anyone. Yeah, Richard Rohr, the Franciscan friar. I love that. You know, it's great to be a friar. You know, not, you can be a monk any old time. Not everybody gets to be a friar. He's a Franciscan friar, and he founded the Center for Action and Contemplation in Albuquerque. And a wonderful guy. He talks about non-dualism a lot. And he's loved by many and despised by some because they don't like his radically inclusive message. But it fits really well into unity. And if you want to, you can get on his mailing list and receive his daily meditation of upliftment that goes out to like 265,000 people, I think, Richard Rohr. And he wrote this prayer to Mary Magdalene. And there's only one bit I don't like, and I'll talk about that, but it's not a deal breaker, but I like the rest of it. Mary Magdalene, apostle to the apostles, because she was a counselor to the other disciples, right? Apostle to the apostles, woman of wisdom and passion, sinner yet saint. Sounds a lot like you and me. Passionate yet likely celibate. That's the bit I don't like, and I'll talk about it why in a minute. Female, yet totally engaged with the male disciples and Jesus. A proactive doer, yet so calmly contemplative. Never reactive, but so active in the ways of love. Pray for us that we might become what you are. See, Mary Magdalene for me, if Mary is constant, Mary Magdalene is embraces it all, you know, devoting as a life to seeing the wholeness of things. I don't like necessarily think that she was celibate, because I don't think there's anything wrong with consecrated love, right, in that sense, just as there's nothing wrong with eating food, right? It's when you become obsessed with it, it becomes a problem, right? And many people think that she was actually the wife of Jesus, right? So they had a full life together. But if there is a meaning to the celibate ideal, I think it's pure. She was pure in her consciousness. She was free of lower urges. She'd brought herself up higher. Yeah? Any other words you would describe Mary Magdalene, if you're embodying that consciousness today? Or are you happy with where we are? Moving on. All right. Courageous. Yeah. You know, it takes courage. We had a lot of that word last week, courage. And it comes from the French root, which means with heart, right? So when you're courageous, you're filled with that heart connection, not just your head connection. And that's very much for me what Mary Magdalene is. And I love that, you know, because you don't want it to just be a nice idea in your head. You want it to make it real. All right, here we go. Another Mary, and we'll throw in a Martha. Mary and Martha. Mary and Martha were sisters, and they were brothers to Lazarus. And if we know our Bible, we know that Lazarus, he rose from the dead, thanks to the help of Jesus. He was dead, and Jesus brought him back to life. But this is another part of the story. While the disciples were on their way, Jesus came to a village where a woman named Martha made him welcome. She had a sister, Mary, who seated herself at the Lord's feet and stayed there listening to his words. Now, Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to get on with the work all by myself? Tell her to come and give me a hand." But the Lord answered, "Martha, Martha, you are fretting and fussing about so many things, and only one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen what's best, and it shall not be taken away from her." This sounds like a put down on Martha, but I don't think it really is, because it's describing two ways of approaching spirit, right? One is in the spirit of service, one is in the spirit of listening and imbibing truth, right? Studying and imbibing truth, which was Mary's part. Where did it all go wrong? And you can understand why she was ticked off, can't you? This woman's in there listening to Jesus filing the nails. This other woman is slaving in the kitchen. That's the problem. It's not that service is lesser than just devotion. They're both valuable, right? But it's saying in her case, she'd lost sight of the fact that she was just serving, and she began to feel bad, less than, because she was working harder than the other person. So, she started to judge the other person for what she wasn't doing. Now, so the message for me is, there's ways of serving. There's ways of giving through kitchen duty, if you like, and there's ways of serving through attentive listening, but they're both valid. But when we start to compare and judge, so what did Martin Luther King Jr. say? He said, "Be the best street sweeper you can be," right? If you're serving, do it with total commitment. But one thing is necessary. So often when we're multitasking, when we're busy, when we're working hard to make ends meet, doing things for our family, we feel hard done by, don't we? We get into that Martha, Martha consciousness, and Jesus gives us good advice. When you're doing something, one thing is necessary, right? Just do what it is that is yours to do. Because if you're overwhelmed with 10,000 things, you can't do any of them well. And we know this. If I'm working and I've got numerous things to do, I will do one thing at a time and then move on to the next. Because if I let all the others come and overwhelm my mind, I'm completely incapable, right? So we have to deal with it one thing at a time. Jesus said it way before Jack Palance said it in, what was that movie? City Slickers, when he said one thing. Very wise statement. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to John 4. And this is my favorite, I think, because this woman was a piece of work, man. This is the woman at the well. And here's the thing. Jesus is traveling through a foreign land, right? He's going through the land of the Samaritans. They were despised. They were a minority. They were looked down upon. They didn't worship in the right way, etc., etc. It's midday. He's thirsty. And then he comes across a woman at the well drawing water. Now, he goes up and talks with her. Two strikes against him, right? Because in the taboo of it, he wasn't supposed to go through Samaria anyway. That was and you certainly weren't supposed to talk to a Samaritan. And then, even if you did talk to a Samaritan, it better be a man. Don't talk to a woman, because women were, lesser. It doesn't matter to Jesus. He went right up to her and talked to her. So what's the message right there, just before we get into the whole story? What's the message? It's acceptance. It says, I don't care who you are. I'm going to talk with you. Everybody is welcome in the kingdom, right? I can go anywhere I like and do what I like. And here's the first words out of his mouth. He says, give me a drink. He didn't say, excuse me, madam, may I interrupt you for a second and trouble you for a little glass of water? He didn't say that. He just said, give me a drink. He went, got down and dirty with it, right? Very direct, very honest. And it freaked her out. She says, what? You, a Jew, ask a drink from a Samaritan woman? And then he replies, listen, if only you knew who it was who was asking for a drink, he'd give you living water. And then they go on in a dialogue about it. And she's very full of, I would say, chutzpah. She's very willing to give back as good as she's getting, right? She stands up to him. And I love that quality. You know, that quality, we've all come across it, where somebody has stood up and you think, whoa, I didn't think they could do that. Have you had that moment in your life when you stood up and said something and you surprised yourself? Yeah? Wow, I didn't know I had it in me, you know? That's the quality. Here's the thing, though. In their dialogue together, they're talking theology, and Jesus pours out the whole of the spiritual path to the Samaritan woman. He tells her the core of everything here, which is amazing, right? It's not in the university, not in the temple, not to the scholars and the learned, but to a Samaritan woman. He says, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. And then she says, as we all do, she says, I know the Messiah, that's Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will make everything clear to me. See, don't we often do that? Thane talked about it only happens in the present moment, and yet what do? We put the present moment ahead of us till later. You know, one day it'll happen. I know this Messiah's coming. And Jesus says, listen, I'm it, man. I'm it. And the Christ is always saying that to us. I'm it. Here we are. You know, this is not a rehearsal anymore. We're here. We can have that. We can have radical self-acceptance. We can have the transformative power of spirit because there's no time or space to that stuff, right? It's available to us all. And Jesus penetrates deep inside our soul. You know, he says, she says, so I got to go off and talk to my husband. He says, well, I know you've been married 5 times already, but guess what? The guy you're going off to, he's not your husband. So Jesus knows her. So she's no perfect woman, is she? She's been married 5 times, and now she's living in sin according to the rules of the book. But it doesn't matter, right? You could be a prostitute. You can be anything. It doesn't matter to God. God will penetrate in. God will love you. Anyway, that's the message I'm hearing. Very powerful story. And she grabs everybody and they're amazed that something remarkable has happened. And why is it so remarkable? Because it's so down to earth and so real. Yeah? What else comes to mind with that uppity woman, the Samaritan woman at the well? Anything that you read from that? Anything else that you want to add? What's that? Understanding, okay. She was broadening her understanding. She was willing to understand, wasn't she? She was willing to pursue. She was willing to have a deep spiritual conversation with this guy. A total stranger, right? Amazing. And she what? She was open to anything, wasn't she? She was open to, right. And this was doubly remarkable because she was a Samaritan, so it's supposed to come a certain way. She threw all that out. She, in that present moment, she was making connection to something real. Yeah. Willingness to go deeper. I like that, too. That's the only way it's going to happen, right? Yeah. All right. Excellent. Comes back to that persistence and constancy again. You know, we're in this for the long haul. All right, moving on. Mark 5, woman with a hemorrhage. There's a big crowd gathered. They're all gathering around Jesus trying to get healed. And among them was a woman who had suffered from hemorrhages for 12 years. So it's a chronic illness. And in spite of the long treatment by many doctors in which she had spent all she had, she had become worse rather than better. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, if I touch even his clothes, I shall be healed. And there and then the flow of blood dried up, and she knew in herself that she was cured of her affliction. Aware at once that power had gone out of him, Jesus turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? His disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing round you, and yet you ask who touched me? But he kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, trembling with fear because she knew what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace, free from your affliction." That's a powerful passage, isn't it? We talk about it a lot, about touching the hem of the garment. She didn't even expect to talk with him, hug him, be even really in his presence, just touching him a little bit. That was her faith. She knew that if she could just do that, right? Now, he knew something had happened because energy had flowed. But I don't think it was a one-way flow because I think she was filled with energy too. The desire and the faith to be healed, to change. So he felt that zap of energy from her. That's why he said, "Who touched me?" Because they were all touching him. They were crowded together. So it wasn't a regular touch, right? It was a touch of desire. It was a touch of true devotion. I know this can happen for me. And she was so filled with that faith that guess what? It did. And he didn't say, "I did it," did he? He said, "Daughter, your faith has healed you." Your ability to see something higher, yeah? Powerful for all of us who are moving through chronic illnesses and difficulties. There's the promise, isn't it? Are we willing to stay courageous, to stay connected? Because that's what it's about. Touching the garment is daily word for me in the morning. I read my daily word and it keeps me connected to the truth. A time of meditation could do the same thing. You can listen to Richard Rohr. There's so many ways we can stay connected and touch the hem of the garment to remind ourselves that we are not just human beings. We are spiritual beings living in a spiritual universe governed by spiritual laws. Transformation can occur. And if you say, "Well, suppose it hadn't, I've still got my chronic illness," it's very different to deal with it from a consciousness of courage and faith than it is to deal with it from a consciousness of fear and lack, isn't it? Totally different. It's how I choose to approach the conditions of my life. How would you describe her? What qualities? We got constancy for Mary. We got devotion and courage. Mary Magdalene. We've got dedication to service. We got chutzpah and feistiness from the woman at the well. Strong strength. Faithfulness. Powerful stuff. Now, last week, some people lost their heads. And so we got another one losing their heads. Here's my last two women, okay? And you remember it from last week if you were here. Old Holofernes lost his head to Judith, and JL put a peg through another guy's head. And we had a fun time interpreting the metaphysics of it. But this is another one. Now, we all know about King Herod, right? There's always good kings and bad kings. Which one was Herod? Bad king. But even though he was bad, he still had a yearning for spiritual things. But he was surrounded by people that kept him stuck in his wealth and in his greed. And he'd married his brother's wife. And this was not a good thing, according to John the Baptist. So it was this Herod who had sent men to arrest John and put him in prison at the insistence of his brother Philip's wife, Herodias, whom he had married. And John said, "You have no right to take your brother's wife." What do you think? Should he have married his brother's wife? It's unusual, I would say. But obviously, he and his new wife were kind of upset about John being judgmental. So Herodias nursed a grudge against John and would willingly have killed him, but she could not, for Herod went in awe of him, knowing him to be a good and holy man. So she gave him his protection. He liked to listen to him, although what he heard left him greatly disturbed. See, so even the most egoic parts of our consciousness resonate with a higher calling, even though it ticks us off because we realize it's going to destroy us if we allow it to enter into our being fully, right? When spirit comes, it wipes out all humanness, all lower levels. but we yearn for it, even though we kind of still want to hold on to our greed and our appetites. There's something that calls us up. So Herodias found her opportunity when Herod, on his birthday, gave a banquet to his chief officials and commanders and the leading men of Galilee. Her daughter came in and danced. And in the Bible, they don't give you the name. But in tradition and legend, her name was Salome, and she danced the dance of the seven veils. Each veil a little flimsier than the last. Let's put it like that. Her daughter came in and danced, and so delighted Herod and his guests that the king said to the girl, "Ask me for anything you like, and I'll give it to you." I think he's got some kind of spectacles on right now. He even said an oath, "Whatever you ask, I'll give you up to half my kingdom." Is he nuts? Have you ever done this? When you're deep in your desires and you're overwhelmed by the things of this world, you're willing to sell yourself short, aren't you? I'm losing money at Vegas, but I know if I just play a little longer, it's going to all turn around. I'll give half my kingdom on the next table. Right? Yeah, there we go, you know. She went out and said to her mother, because she was young, she didn't know what the heck was going on. She was being used. "What shall I ask for?" And she replied, "The head of John the Baptist." The girl hurried straight back to the king with her request. "I want you to give me here and now on a dish the head of John the Baptist." The king was greatly distressed. He made a foolish statement, hadn't he? And he couldn't go back on it. Have you ever done this? Have you ever said things you later regretted? Of course you have. We all have. The king was greatly distressed, yet because of the oath and his guest, he could not bring himself to refuse her. So he had to honor what he'd said. We held accountable for every last word, says Jesus. He sent a soldier to the guard with orders to bring John's head, and the soldier went to the prison and beheaded him. And then he brought the head on a dish and gave it to the girl, and she gave it to her mother, and her mother gave it to Herod. Metaphysics, please. Don't try this at home. It's not going to go down too well. Sometimes we're going to lose part of us, an important part, if we sell ourselves short, because we're all connected. Herod and John the Baptist are all part and parcel of us, right? If we say stupid things that we later regret, there's a price to pay, isn't there? And sometimes forces happen, even though we don't mean it to turn out that way, it happens that way. So you've got to really be careful to be a person of integrity as much as we can, right? And not say foolish things led on by desire or greed or whatever it might be that leads us astray. So, folks, we're at the end of Uppity Women of Bible 1 and 2. What are we taking away from this? What one quality can you take away this week? Which woman resonates? At 9:30, they were really uppity and they said, "I'm taking them all." I said, "I want you to focus on one, please. You can take them all, but what are you going to focus on at any given time, right? One thing is needful at any given time. What word, what quality stands out for you? Let's just get three and then we'll move on. What really resonates? What quality? Okay, so that's what you're taking, right? Where you've been has no influence on where you are right now and what's possible. In fact, it can be a blessing. It can show you something deeper rather than being a curse. Yeah, very good. Do you, and why? She was, yeah, she was, and she was guileless almost. She was so natural. She was so open, wasn't she? She's my favorite, actually, because of that. You know, that natural yearning for something, and the willingness to be real about it, you know, go into conversation with it. All right, one more. What? Herod's wife, you liked her, did you? You should have, if you liked her, you should see her daughter. No, I'm just Say again. There we go. Women always get what they want. I think Pratiksha told us that last week. So that's the bottom line. Women rule. Amen.
Right, today's meditation is going to be a moving, uppity meditation. A little bit of motion. It's a dance, if you will, a seated dance, about hearing from Spirit and about being open to listen to Spirit. So the motions go like this. Here I am giving my hand open to Spirit, like above my ego, bringing it through my ear, then into my heart space here before my heart. And my other hand, right, we've got masculine and feminine coming past my ear, and my hands meet here. I'm just going to linger here in the presence of love. And as I do so, that leads to steps, practical steps. What can I do with my hands? I'm just going to kind of rotate here and bring, becoming a larger and larger sphere, almost like something being created and ready to be born and shared in the world. If you touch somebody else, so be it. That's what being born into the world is about, right? So here's how it looks with a little bit of music.
Thanks for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We sincerely thank you for your contribution, and we affirm with you, divine love, through me, blesses and multiplies all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive, and I am grateful.